Hi, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Lisa Lorraine Smith, and I'm the Chief Program Officer here at the Network of Jewish Human Service Agencies. And, I say this every time, but it's so true. I get the pleasure of, I guess, hosting these affinity groups. We have around 27 now. So I get to meet so many people in the network, all the different kinds of services that we do. But really, the best part is also getting to know your chairs, who really think about what are the best topics, what should we talk about, how are we going to make this interactive. And you two have Laura Spiegelman from JFS of Kansas City and Yonit Hoffman from CJE in Chicago. And they've got a really nice program planned. I have a few announcements besides the fact that I've asked everyone to rename themselves with their community by right-clicking in their box. That would be great. But if anyone's new to this group today, the first time you've been here, it would be so good if you could put in the chat who you are and that you're new, say hello, and what community you're from. So that's one thing. And then another piece of housewarming is we are changing the date of our next affinity group meeting. I know that I had said it was 12/16. We're actually going to do it on December 9th, change the date, December 9th, same time, December 9th. I'll send you an email, but I wanted to let you know. And also, we're going to be sending out an end of year survey. We want to know what you think about these affinity groups, and that will be coming that first week in December. So be on the lookout for that. And with that, we have 31 people who are here. We had 70 who signed up. We'll see who comes in and we'll figure out what we want to do about breakouts. You'll let me know. Okay, so take it away, Laura.
Our threshold was 30. So now we're like really on the cusp. We'll just have to make our best decision. I just want to echo what Lisa said and welcome everyone here. I just want to say, I don't know, Jenny, I'm just channeling a little bit of you, but I don't know if anyone's been running this week, but if you need permission to take a deep breath, it is provided right now. Don't forget to exhale it. That's my challenge. I just like breathe and run. But we know that your time is so valuable and that you have lots of places to be. And typically our Holocaust affinity group is Holocaust professionals affinity group is very, you know, the content is very much. Just a quick reminder. Thank you. Thanks, Lisa, to mute yourselves, unless you're talking, in which case we want to hear you. We know that our content is often very specific to our survivors, but today we want to talk about something that's a little more general and we think is probably on lots of people's minds as it relates to our work with our survivors, and that is return to, we don't say return to work because we've been working the whole time, but return to the office. Anyway, I'm going to put in the chat, so I don't know, what do you think, Yoni? We've got 35 now. Should we do some breakouts, small breakouts?
Yeah, and I would say return to in person.
That's right. Because
as you'll see, I think it's already in the chat, before we break into groups, which I do think we should do, is maybe give it a couple minutes. Laura put in some great questions to sort of start to think about. So what, and Laura, maybe you can share those, but I think we should do, if we have how many, 36 people, how about six, high, double high. How about six breakout groups? Does that sound about right? And then we would talk and then come back and have each of you kind of present a little bit about what your group talked about so that we don't miss any great ideas or protocols or things that, you know, would be relevant for everybody.
I think okay. That's perfect. So I put some discussion questions in the chat so that if you're like me and you get to your breakout and you're not sure what the question was, you'll have it in the chat. And then if you can elect someone from your breakout to just do a 2-minute highlight share. Yonit said this, the benefit of us being together is that we get to hear what other people are doing, and that helps inform our path too as we move forward.
Here we go, so, you guys.
Can you before we break out, maybe just read the topics? I think it'd be
absolutely
helpful.
Absolutely. In case auditory is better for you. So client face-to-face visits, Do we have a home visit protocol? Do we have an office visit protocol? Anything that we want to share on vaccination mandates for staff and or clients and how that impacts our visit protocol. And we also wanted to share about programming. You know, are we doing virtual? Are we doing hybrid? Are we doing in person? What does that look like at your agency? And a couple of people had separately emailed me about these things, emailed Yonit and Lisa and I about these things. And so we thought it would be a good time to share. And if anyone has other things they want to discuss in their group, this is just what we came up with. But if there are other things coming up for you, I'm sure they're coming up for other people too, because we're all navigating together.
How long do we want the breakout rooms to be? 20 minutes? Is that what we said?
I think closer to 10, 10,
that's
15.
15, right in the middle.
Okay, right in the middle. Perfect.
There we are.
And if then, once you're kind of talking in your groups, if you can kind of assign one person for when we come back to just highlight a couple things that were particularly interesting or innovative or an issue that we all should know about, that would be helpful.
Okay, here we go, you guys. How did it go?
It was good. We needed more time.
We always need more time. I know. I don't think everyone's back yet, though.
No, it was way too quick.
Yonit, Laura, are you guys back yet?
I'm back.
I'm back too.
Lisa, thanks for moving me.
Okay. I wasn't, you know,
I hate to be high maintenance, but Anant and I saw each other. We're like, oh, we're in the same room.
No, I hear you. The thing is that I didn't realize. Well, we don't have to talk about this now, but I didn't realize that I could leave the main space and go into a room and then come back again. So I thought I had to stay here. So I was glad that I was able to do that. So
I think that was just way too quick. And that's why we should just have the discussion as a whole group and hear what some of the ideas were. So we had how many? 6 breakout groups? So I think we should just really, for the sake of using our time, just start maybe number 1. They were 1 through 6, correct? So yes. Maybe we can hear from group 1 first, and then we can just also, if people didn't have a chance in their groups to say something that is interesting, I think we can also have time for that afterward as well. Who is in group 1? Hi, Sherry.
Okay, Sherry. Let's hear everything.
But I wasn't the designated person. I think Clara was. Clara.
I was designated. I didn't. You could speak. The takeaway that I had from it really was that there's a very, there's a great variety of responses in the different communities. Some have, in Canada, it's very different than it is in the U.S., and they have not gone back. So there's the question of staff, you know, are you in person? Do you have a vaccine mandate? And then there's the question of the programming and then the in-home visit. So there's, the general rule of thumb is everyone seems to be careful, you know, very careful. There's a variety of whether or not staff is mandated to be vaccinated and whether, but in general, it seems like everyone is approaching things very rationally and carefully, and trying obviously to move back to more in-person services and in-home visits, but doing it carefully. Those of the communities that were in the South and warmer climates seem to be fortunate that they're having in-person events outside. But it seems to be different in the different cities. And anyone else from the group I was in, please chime in.
No, that was good.
Anybody else in group 1 have anything that they wanted to add, or we could go to group 2 and get a quick summary and.
Actually, there's one thing that I noticed, and the group 1 can agree or disagree, but there was a distinction between those agencies that know all their clients and whether or not they've been vaccinated or connected to vaccines, and those that choose not to even know, not to even ask their clients. So that's the only thing that I think is, while Clara expressed all the commonalities, I think, you know, in terms of we want to get back and those sorts of things, I think that that was pretty a stark differentiation.
So are people not asking their clients because of HIPAA or because they don't want to seem intrusive, or?
That wouldn't be HIPAA because you're asking them.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, I can't speak because we know about all our clients, whether or not they've had vaccines, and we're constantly encouraging them. So.
So what about, is that something to talk about that agency that doesn't ask and the reasons why? Is that person on the call?
I mean, we don't ask in Canada because of the human rights chart. So, but we, someone mentioned in my group that they don't ask, they assist people to book the vaccination. So that's exactly what we're doing. We still call the people and ask them whether they need our help with booking a vaccination appointment. And that's, we're not asking them whether they are vaccinated or not, but at that call, when we ask them, when we offer them help, we get the information where they are vaccinated already or not. They just share it willingly. So that's our way to know whether people are vaccinated or not, but we are not allowed to ask them directly. We simply offer them help to book their appointment for vaccination.
Is your staff fully vaccinated? Is that a requirement?
Not yet. We've just formed the committee. The board of directors formed the committee for the mandatory vaccination, but it hasn't been in place yet, the policy. So there is a discussion about if we make it mandatory vaccination for the home support staff, why the rest of the agency have the exemption. So we either should all of us be vaccinated or not. But apparently we will be vaccinated, all of us. But again, it's just, it moved to the board level at this point, and they're working on this. We don't know yet how long it will take until to make it official.
I was just going to chime in. This is Laura, and I was in group 4. And we discussed, you know, one of the amazing things about this network is we have agencies, Hedy from San Diego, they've got 400 employees, JFS Kansas City, we've got like 70 employees. And how the vaccine mandate has rolled out also in different size agencies. We at JFS Kansas City, I think we were the first JFS to roll out a vaccine mandate. Everyone had to be vaccinated. It was rolled out in April and everyone had to be vaccinated by end of June. We lost one employee who did get a religious exemption, but it just became, it was clear that it was going to be too complicated to test her weekly because she was really front facing. And so it just ended up not working out for her to stay on. But yeah, Hedy was like, Laura, in San Diego, we've got 400 employees. It's a little more, right? The exemption process, all of it, that weekly testing, it's all more complicated. We also discussed, you know, is the onus of testing on the individual who's got the exemption or on the agency and kind of how that looks at different agencies. And in terms of asking clients, just because I've heard us talking about this, we are asking all of our clients everywhere at the pantry, anyone, you know, that we go and see for our home maintenance program, our transportation program, home visits, you know, for older adult Holocaust survivors, we're asking everyone about vaccination status, and we are documenting it in our database, including the date they got their, we kind of anticipated that there might be boosters, the date they got their vaccines, which one they got, and it's all in our database.
It sounds like we're all in different kind of time trajectories too. So depending on state mandates, depending on whether, you know, in our, in Chicago, our Federation and Federation umbrella agencies kind of decided on a vaccine mandate together, but we're really still in the midst of it. And it's, that's for staff. So it's interesting to hear this kind of almost a dichotomy between mandates for staff, but certainly clients can't and aren't being mandated. And so the protocols then become important because those existed even before vaccines, when there were cases where we, you know, had to assess risk and be able to maybe take precautions and still see someone in a safe way. But it's really interesting to sort of understand. And Laura, you do have a smaller agency that you were able to kind of make those decisions more quickly, whereas the larger the agency, and the more kind of politics sometimes or different regulations, the more complicated it gets. So I know we're in the thick of it right now.
And I know that I want to
shout out. Go ahead, Lisa, go ahead.
No, shout out to who?
I was just going to shout out that the Midwest isn't always the last. It doesn't always trickle in slowly. Look at us. I was just going to say in terms of client vaccination, we are allowing recently, like 2 months ago, we are allowing in-person shopping in our pantry for vaccinated clients. So we're really asking because we need to know anyone in our building. But shout out to the Midwest. Slowly, but not so slowly right now.
So I was just going to say that I do know that JFS San Diego, Hetty, you're getting called out again. You know, your CEO and your board has decided that you're not doing any sort of mandates. You know, it's just not happening, right?
It's not actually true. Well, we have a mandate for all of our staff to be vaccinated, but we have some exemptions, and there are few who are struggling to get those exemptions. And so I don't know, we won't know who has those exemptions, medical and religious exemptions. There won't be many. Out of 400, there'll be about a handful, but most of the time you don't know which handful it is. But with our clients, we certainly can't fire the Holocaust survivors, who aren't choosing to be vaccinated. I mean, that's a whole different thing.
I didn't realize that San Diego decided that they would do a vaccine mandate.
Yeah.
But it's in process. It's in process and we're struggling with it because some of the staff in the aging and wellness division who are really well-respected, important, degreed, multilingual staff are not choosing to get the vaccine and they're not replaceable. It is a challenge. And who decides what is a valid religious exemption? That's not a position I would want to be in.
Great question. We're in the same place as you, Hetty, now with that. I want to make sure that we have our other groups have a chance to talk too. So I think three is up next. Is that right? Oh, that was my group, but I'm not the reporter.
So I was partially volunteered to be the speaker for the group. We could have used probably another half an hour, I think, and only got to a couple of topics. But for me, I think what stood out were the challenges of trying to do the hybrid and trying to make decisions about which way to go. So we talked about the programming, doing it in person, doing it virtually, doing it hybrid. Hybrid seems to be the least effective or least impactful, I think, and the most challenging to do. And I have to agree with that just from thinking about it. I don't personally do programming, so I'm only envisioning what that looks like, but that I can see would be pretty challenging. And I think the other thing that came up, and again, it goes back to we're in the midst of everything and continue to be in the midst. And we at JFS in Detroit have gone back and forth multiple times trying to make staff feel heard and comfortable, trying to make sure that we are doing the best we can to serve our clients and just trying to do the right thing for everybody all the time. So I think what I find is that, we're going forward, we're stepping back, we're going forward, we're stepping back, and trying to find that middle ground where we can sort of keep everybody stable. If I can just speak to one thing that about the vaccinations. So most of our staff is vaccinated. I'm just wondering if other people have seen or heard in their agencies, I don't want to say arguing or fighting or anything like that, but you can tell among the vaccinated staff from how they speak and even know who some of the unvaccinated staff are, not because somebody has told somebody, not nobody's revealing any information, but people do somehow know from other people who've said, I just don't want to do it. If they're seeing any inter-agency squabbling, if you will, or bad hard feelings. I'm feeling like there is some of that showing its ugly head, and how anybody might be dealing with that.
I'm glad to say that, from what I can tell, people are very professional, and we're respecting everybody's rights, their judgments. We are we're requiring those who are not vaccinated, we have to actually produce our vaccine card to HR. And those who do not, for whether they have it, they don't, who knows, are required to take COVID tests twice a week and work from home on whatever, like the day that they're negative, it's an immediate PCR test. So they can come in the office, be, you know, by themselves. But then the other days, I think they have to work at home. And people, like I would never know if I didn't know, like, who those people are. Everybody's just respectful, thank goodness. We're not having political confrontations.
Yeah, I don't see it as political, and I don't see people being disrespectful about it. I just, there's an undercurrent, I guess, more than anything else.
I can just jump in for a second here, though it's not my turn. I apologize. I don't feel so much at work, because I think almost everyone's been vaccinated at work, but I feel this in my synagogue. Many people have not chosen the vaccine there and haven't gone to synagogue in well over a year. And I used to go to synagogue twice a day, and I'm not willing to fight that fight because I'm going to lose it. And I'd rather therefore stay home than feel uncomfortable and wondering who's coming in, because no one's wearing masks either. I wear a mask everywhere. I'm on the far side of that, of ultra caution, whether it's supermarket or whatever, but that's my comfort level. And I respect people's things also. Therefore, if I can't be comfortable, I'm just not participating. And we do similar at work. We try to find ways of making everyone comfortable as much as possible.
I think that it's really good to name that there are these undercurrents and to talk about them, because I think even though, for the most part, as Sherry said, we're all professionals, we work in agencies where people are respectful and make every effort to be that way, I think there are a lot of strong feelings about this. And I think that that comes through. And I think that finding a way to have a place to talk about that safely is important, especially maybe team by team. So it's not necessarily like a big town hall meeting with everybody, because you don't want anybody to feel uncomfortable. It's kind of like a parallel of this sort of inclusion or not inclusion with hybrid programming versus in-person programming. It's how to make everybody feel like they can be a part of something and not be judged. And in our conversation, for example, people were also talking about with hybrid programming that some clients didn't want to be seen. And I think there's a parallel here in terms of being heard, being seen among our peers and our staff, and certainly among our clients, there are a lot of differences in whether or not they feel strongly about vaccinations or not. And so we've really challenged ourselves and learned to try to be non-judgmental, to try to really respect other people's opinions, even if we may have a strong opinion in the other direction. I don't know if anyone else is having those experiences or have had sort of transparent or open discussions about it, either in small groups or with leadership.
Because it is always the big elephant in the room right now, right?
Julia. I'm so sorry, guys. I'd love to jump in. I'm probably one of those people that has potentially run out of some patients. And the reason why is because we do lots of home visits, because we understand the dire need of survivors for particular services. I'm also a notary as well. So not only are we doing a BETSEDEC advanced planning documentation, which the survivors need, but you know, we work closely with social services to provide them, you know, everything that they may need to keep them safe, right? And I work also with the Russian speaking community. And nothing has frustrated me more as a first-generation immigrant, as a Jew, as just a person that works, in, you know, as a grandchild of a Holocaust survivor. It's nothing has frustrated me more than the unbelievable bombardment of misinformation. It's been so incredibly painful on a personal level, on a level for my clients where I believe that this misinformation is putting their lives in danger, where part of my job is to keep them safe and try to protect them as much as possible. It's really quite terrifying. And again, it's become more terrifying because my grandfather, who's a survivor, passed away because of COVID. And, you know, we were not able to protect him. It was really early on. So it's a multi-layered issue. I gave birth into COVID. So it's hitting so many check marks on a personal level that I'm having a really hard time understanding why anyone would want to put anybody in harm's way. And also it's complicating, I guess, matters even more because I am surrounded by my guy best friend is works in ER. So I didn't see him for a very long time during the pandemic. And it was very difficult to support someone on the front lines during the pandemic. And because again, and it's, it's become even more complicated. And I understand that the quit rate in his industry, you know, is incredibly high. And I could only imagine what it would be like. I don't envy the social workers at this point. I'm glad I'm not one because I don't know. I honestly don't know how I would deal with a situation. It's so terrifying. Like every time I come into a survivor's home, I'm just like, I brought you some extra masks. Here you go. I brought you some extra PPE equipment. I am so terrified for them. We do ask if survivors are vaccinated or not. And I actually do very softly in a very roundabout way, advocate for vaccines. And again, it's because of the just terrible amount of the bombardment of the misinformation. It's just been from Russian television. It's like watching it. It really gives me severe PTSD because it's like watching, you know, 24-hour propaganda. It's terrifying.
Julia, thank you so much. Yeah, Tatiana, thank you for your note too. Thanks for giving voice. I know a lot of people, I can't speak for anyone else, but I sense that many of us might be feeling that, just like that pile on of stress and trauma from all the directions. Thank you for sharing that and giving voice to that. Absolutely.
And it is terrifying. Want to also just, you know, acknowledge that too.
It is terrifying. It is still terrifying. Absolutely. I know we had groups 5, 6, and also 7, I think. Just 5 and 6. Mm-hmm. 5 and 6. Does anyone want to share from those groups?
I'll go. So it was also, you know, it was everybody so different. Everybody's doing things differently based on their state guidelines, city guidelines. Gail shared Gail Worry from Cherry Hill, you know, they are able to visit vaccinated clients, but not non-vaccinated clients. There was liability waivers that folks were filling out in order to do the home visit. And then we also, I shared that in our office, we have like a tracking system when somebody comes in, whether it's a client or an employee, they have to do like a screening, like go through their symptoms. And so that way we can trace if there's a, you know, pop-up of COVID somewhere, we can trace it who was potentially exposed to it. And then I just want to quickly talk about Cafe Europa. So I think, Rhonda from Edmonton, that they're not doing Cafe Europa right now. And then in LA, we actually started to do it in person, but with strict guidelines, 6 feet apart, everybody has to wear masks at all time, no food. So we give them food to go. And then we have like a group of people who are virtual, group of people who are in person, depending on their comfort level. And then some of the other places they were doing virtual only because of the whole issue with clients don't know who's vaccinated or not, and not comfortable coming into the for cafe room.
Victoria, did you find when you did the in-person with clients, with survivors and those protocols that everyone was able to manage and stick to it, or were their noses coming out of masks and, you know, people wanting naturally to be able to be close to hear each other and so forth?
Can I just jump in here? Because I oversee the Cafe Europa here in LA. So it's a mixture. Most people keep the masks on the entire time, but we do see people wanting to come together. They're hard of hearing. They do bring their mask down and kind of talk close together. And we gently remind them about we're really trying to keep everybody safe. And we know they want to be close. They want to hug each other and all of that. But we really ask that we try to help each other through this and still get together, still try to enjoy something in person, but also be safe. So it's a hard balance because we know that a lot of them want to just be close to their friends and talk and, you know, share.
How many, Heather, how many people did you have all together?
So we have a city and a valley Cafe Europa on a weekly basis. We just started this at the beginning of the month, and we have about 10 people in the valley, which normally we would have 20, but people have told me that they would love to come. But if we don't mandate that everyone be vaccinated, they choose not to come because they don't want to put themselves at risk. In the city, we've had 35 people every week. It's a really big group. We have a big room, so luckily we could spread people around. And it's been that way every week, about 35 people. So it's been great. We also, like Victoria said, we have the virtual program every week as well. So those who do have the Uniper system at home, they can see it.
I just want to mention one tech kind of option that we're exploring, and so far we're just trying to test it out, but to do hybrid so that people actually who are not in the room can see and hear each other better than just kind of a wide space. It's very hard to have people feel really included. And I wondered if anybody has used this technology. It's called OWL, the OWL. I'm going to put the link in the chat. It's from a company called OWL Labs, but it looks like an owl and it actually turns, the camera is voice activated. So it's in the center of a room with maybe for a support group, for example, where some people are in the room, it will turn and the camera is supposed to focus on the person who's speaking so that the people who are on Zoom can hear them and see them more sort of like we're seeing each other. And highlighted. So it's a possibility. We'll certainly let you know how it goes because, you know, trying to figure it out has been a little bit glitchy. We just tried it this week. I think it was yesterday. And there are things, we had a demo too, which was interesting, and they will do free demos, this company.
Should I look into it to get a sponsorship? I mean, a partnership?
I mean, I would find out, I would look at the demo first and let us test it to see whether it's worth it. But yes, if it's workable, it could be a really cool thing. They're also portable. So for example, we have 8 support groups that are all virtual right now. And to be able to then take it to a different location and have maybe 3 or 4 people in a room and 5 people on, you know, on Zoom, but really be able to interact would be great. So let me see if it works, but yes, for sure. They're about $1,000 each. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're a cost, but we've heard about some, we have a JCFS locally who put in a very fancy kind of expensive Zoom system that can do what I describe, and that can be tens of thousands of dollars, so, or more. So just thought I would.
Laura said that you have it. Do you have OWL at Kansas City? Is it working?
We do. It's so funny. We were just on a meeting. We were just trying hybrid on an all staff meeting where we were discussing return to the office. And it's a little trippy. It was, I don't know, Yonit, if this was your experience or Hetty, but it's kind of horizontal because we were in a room almost 360. And then there were a bunch of people that were just connected from their homes, but it worked. And it did follow the person who was speaking. It was pretty cool.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's a learning curve, right, Hetty?
Yeah.
That's what I heard. This is for one program, and I heard there was an expert in our agency, and then that expert left the agency on day one of it, coincidentally.
So, you know, that's not good.
It was coincidental, but not good.
Yeah.
It is. It's so interesting. I'm finding it's like we've figured out how to work from home on some days, how to work from the office some days, but to do both is, you know, we're betwixt in between, but we're like trying to navigate. So yeah, I'm glad you put that in. OWL seems to be the system we happen to use to Yoni. So if we can save anyone else all the demos, we've all got stuff to do.
Yeah.
Does anyone else want to share groups 5 and 6? Does anyone else want to share any learning before we give a quick intro into what we're going to be talking about in December?
I just want to maybe just jump in while everyone was talking and really help me to clarify. I'm trying to balance my own fear, which is off the charts, and at the same time, be available to clients. I'm a notary also, and they get their BEG life certificates. There's no saying, sorry, I can't see you. I got to make it work one way or another. And I wear my mask. I ask them to wear a mask, and I'm trying to get in it as fast as possible and not to chat with them. But it is, for me, highly anxiety provoking. But I said, okay, I got to put on my professional hat and put my personal fears aside for that moment. And everywhere else, my personal fears are rampant.
Well, good for you that you're able to do that, you know, for your work and for your clients, as difficult as it is.
I couldn't live with myself if I said to them, sorry, go to your bank. The bank may not do it. How do you get to the bank?
Right.
And how many times the bank screws up the BEG form because they see German and they go ballistic. We don't know what to do with this. So they rely on me, and I have to hope and pray that as a trying to be a believing Jew that I will be protected by doing what's good and right. But that's the things that happen to lots of people.
Well, thank you for telling us.
Is Julie still on?
Yes. Julie?
I'm here.
Which Julie?
Which Julie? Julie from the claims conference.
Hi.
Oh, Julie from the claims conference is back. And hello, hello.
Hi, everyone.
I didn't mean to
how
put
is life with baby.
good. Yeah, thank you.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot, Julie, but I don't know if you mind sharing instead of me misrepresenting
what
you shared about some of the feedback that the claims conference is getting about in-person events.
So we've had some agencies come to us first to ask what our opinion is. So of course we put it back on you because really you're, as we've just learned, every agency has different procedures and protocols. So you need to follow those. But we have had some, you know, I was joking, it's always the home care complaints, but we actually have gotten a few socialization complaints because some agencies are requiring that if you want to come to in-person, that everyone must be vaccinated. And I was just saying it has seemed to be more helpful or when it came from the survivors, so the majority who were vaccinated and the majority who were consulted, whether it was their advisory committee or a majority of the people who are regulars at events, said they want it to be for only vaccinated people. So it helped to kind of say it was from the survivors and not necessarily a mandate from the agency, but it doesn't mean it hasn't been painful and challenging from those that we heard from to have to implement that, of course. So I had asked in our group if at those in-person you also offer it to be sort of virtual so they could join from home. But I heard from our group and also just hearing you now that that's also very complicated and may not work out so well. Because it's kind of a different event when you're in person or remote. We've also heard you need different teachers, right? Like someone who's great in person, if you have a class, may not be very good in the course for engaging people remotely. So that's sort of the initial, we've gotten a few, I'm not saying we're inundated, it's still home care, but we started to hear from a few people as in-person things have come, which of course is revealing their vaccination status to us. So, but generally what I heard is that it's sort of easier, it sort of takes a little bit off of you when it's this you've consulted with your survivors, whether it's your committee or whoever are the regulars, I guess.
I would say too, that along those lines, that it depends on where, which venue you're doing an event. So for example, we had a big Bobby R commemoration at the Illinois Holocaust Museum, and we followed their protocols. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, like, so they didn't require vaccination status. It was a hybrid event. They required masking and social distancing. And that was what was stated. And it was actually also advantageous because they had a bigger live stream capacity than we would as an agency or a program. So we were able to do a pretty successful hybrid kind of program where the live streaming was really technically very good. And there were about 65 people in house and about 400 people virtually. So sort of using the venue to sort of guide the protocols also kind of takes it off of your agency, your program making a decision. It really then has to do with complying with where you're going to be. Not to always pass the buck, but I do think there is something about that kind of normalizing it to this is the way it's done here that takes it off of any particular person or decision maker. I also see that we're almost out of time, right? Could it be?
Went fast.
I'm wondering, this seems like, could this be a good Yammer
conversation, Julie and Susan? And
I mean, I love a good Yammer conversation. So I would gladly, if you want us to post something, what are people doing? Or we would be glad to do that too. It's just incredibly helpful. And I always say thank you for letting us participate because it's really helpful for us to hear what's going on in the field from all of you and sort of what the reality is. We hear it piecemeal, but it's sort of when you hear it all together, it's super helpful for us because we're also still trying to sort of find our way and how we can be helpful with socialization and other things. In fact, Yonita, I just emailed you that I'd love to hear how the OWL testing goes. So I just thank you again for including us. This is really super helpful.
I'd just like to chime in and say it was very interesting that there was one agency that said they're not allowed to ask their clients if they're vaccinated or not. So we really, you know, we're hearing that different agencies, different states, and that's in and of itself is very challenging.
Really varies across the board. Mm-hmm. So it would be great if we could facilitate a Yammer conversation or any of our other like smaller listservs because
it really does help.
It's not that we're gonna change everything we're doing, but I have actually taken policies that and protocols and forms that I've gotten from other agencies and presented it to the leadership at my agency, and they've used that to think about what they want to do. I think it really is something we have to do together in some ways as best we can. But to shift, I'm not going to say pivot because that's one of those buzzwords of the past, but I said it anyway. Just to remind you of a couple things coming up before our next affinity group, which Lisa told you at the very beginning is going to be December 9th instead of December 16th. And I'll talk about that in one second. We do have our intimate gathering groups on November 13th and 14th. I'm not sure if Jenny is still on, but Jenny Frumer is leading those. And you will be getting an invitation, I think, right? About 2 weeks prior.
Yes, right. Soon. They're
limited. They're smaller groups that are limited to about 15 professionals. So that's to remember November 13th and 14th. And then speaking of having the ear and the guidance of Claims Conference, we also on December 9th, we're talking about shifting to different topic altogether, but we had a lot of questions about what different programs are doing, whether Claims Conference or not Claims Conference connected programs, about distributing financial assistance in different ways. So really kind of the mechanics and the protocols of food distribution. Are you using voucher cards? Are you using other kinds of methodology? And what are some of the challenges and ideas that we can kind of learn from each other? So I know also a big topic with probably a lot of variation, as Susan and Julie know, but we're here to tackle those tough topics and at least have some conversation about it. So we're thinking to do that on December 9th. And then just kind of as a preview for part two of that, we're also aware that the whole topic of financial assistance to survivors for these concrete needs has all kinds of other issues with regard to equity. Do you give everybody the same thing? How do you integrate individual needs? Do you triage? Do you have wait lists for certain things? How do you message all those differences to clients? So we're thinking that that deserves its own separate topic time. And so that might be a topic too. And then I think, Lisa, you were also going to remind, maybe you did at the beginning, that we'll have a survey about all of this next time too.
And also, thank you, Tatiana. I don't know what I would do without Tatiana. She's in a few of the affinity groups. And sometimes I get my dates wrong. I'm embarrassed, but it's true. And it's my fault. November 17th and 18th is the intimate gatherings. So thank you, Tatiana, for recognizing that so quickly. And Jenny, you're still here. We're looking forward to that. And everyone will get an invitation soon. Just RSVP. And that would be terrific. And thank you all for being here. Thank you, Laura. Thank you, Yonit. Thank you, everyone who participated. And keep on keeping on and doing the great work that you are. So
it's brave work, team. Yeah. Brave work. Keep doing brave work.
Okay. Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.